The Majority Report, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. Even Saturday and Sunday are casual. Sorry, Jesus. So don't forget your denim hip huggers. Don't forget your bootcut jeans. We're not afraid of dungarees on the Majority Report.
All right. It is Friday, December 17th, 2010. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. It's Casual Friday, and we are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. You know, eventually we won't even have to do a Friday show. We're just going to do the intro. And then we will have no time to do the show, and that'll be it. We'll just wrap it up, and that will be the entire thing. Got a big show for you today. As we do every Friday, we try, it's Casual Friday, so we try and get a little more casual. Week's worth of really depressing news, and then we try and lighten it up a little bit on Friday. Just a little bit, not too much. But just a little bit. Chris Rosen will be here giving me some film picks for the weekend. Of course, his picks are limited to those that are streaming free on Netflix. Well, if you have a Netflix membership, and on demand, because I can never go out to go to an actual movie because of my family. Because of my family. I just ruined my life. Of course, I'm joking. I'm very, very pleased about my family ruining my life. Another guest on the program who will be talking to, I'm not going to say who, because it's part of my surprise. It's part of my surprise that I've been teasing all week. I don't know, maybe it's not a big deal to you people. I'm very excited about it. Evan and Dorsey are very excited about it. All right, let's jump right in some quick news before we bring on Chris Rosen. The House, sadly, passed the tax deal last night. It approved what is considered the most significant tax bill in nearly a decade since the last time George Bush cut taxes and blew a hole in our budget and gave us nothing in return. And by that, I mean we got nothing in return. If tax cuts were highly stimulative to the economy, he would have produced more than an average of 11,000 jobs per month. Maybe I'm not doing it justice. Maybe 12,000 jobs per month over the course of George Bush's tenure. Do you understand? Or the 10 years now since those tax cuts. I think it's approximately 12,000 jobs per month. Tax cuts are very stimulative. Really. It takes at least 140,000 jobs a month just to keep up with the amount of people entering into the job force. You all know that, though. The House passed the measure 277-148 with 112 Democrats and 36 Republicans voting no. The $858 billion package, the largest addition to our deficit of any bill that has been passed under Obama. Do you understand that? Tell that to your conservative friends and family over the holidays. Put that in your candied vegetables and smoke it. I go back to Michigan, and with all due respect to my in-laws, whom I love very much, very much. Each one of them I love more than I can even articulate. For the life of me, I don't understand why every single food that is served is candied in some fashion. It's like candy on the potatoes, marshmallows on the salad, any type of meat products, candied ham. I don't eat the ham. Not because I'm kosher. I never ate ham. I've eaten thin ham, but I cannot eat it when it's thick. I can't eat big pieces of ham like that. I can't do it. I don't know how to do that. I don't do that. But there is no, every salad, all the salads are candy. What is going on? What are you guys doing? You're both like frenetically typing. What are you doing?
I'm putting up a thread on Majority FM.
Well, it's a little bit late for that, isn't it, Dorsey?
That was my fault.
I'm waiting for waiting for one of you guys to explain to me what it is. You guys are both from the Midwest, right? Well, New Jersey, California.
Candy.
All the food is candied.
I've never.
The salad. You can't. I'm just going to eat light. I'm just going to have salad. Okay, well, here it is. Do you want extra marshmallows with that or extra jelly beans? What? No, I want a salad. I don't know. Maybe it's just my wife's family.
My grandma would make orange Jell-O with shredded carrots in it. That's candied salad, I guess.
No, I'm talking like literally. I just want some salad, like the greens. Okay, here they are. How much marshmallow sauce do you want on it? Marshmallow sauce? No. What? That's before we even get to the dessert. I'm going to have a real problem because I'm trying desperately to watch my weight. I know why. Because I want to look slim when I go on. I'm going to be filling in on Countdown. After Christmas. After Christmas. That week. That's one of my surprises. I don't know. Maybe people don't think it's that big of a deal. GM has repurchased the rest of the preferred shares owned by the U.S. government for $2.1 billion. GM bought the 84 million shares for $25.50 apiece, 2% more than their liquidation value. So the buyback brings to $23.1 billion the amount the company has repaid out of the $49.5 billion the government invested in a bailout. And there is no side deal, like where they get a discount window and they buy our treasury bills like it was for the banks. No, the company has rebounded. It is making cars. It is hiring Americans. It is not paying out hundreds of millions of dollars in bonuses to their executives. I think now we own a minority share in the company. Or very close, and we've already had just about half of the loans repaid. So when your relatives at their holidays, after they say, please pass the candied carrots or the sugared spinach or whatever it is, they're passing at the holiday meal, and they say, God, this country's turned into socialists. Because of everything that happened with GM, you just remind them, well, actually, no. We're on the road to being paid back, and it's the one thing that we didn't get screwed out of. Big news in the Senate last night. You know, and it's like cyclical. Fortunately, the Democrats still control the Senate, but apparently they've been working on this omnibus spending bill for a year. It was a $1.1 or $2 trillion spending bill where Republicans got to lard it up with their, you know, their earmarks and then go out and say, earmarks are bad. Well, I have a couple, but mine are good. And it was supposed to pass last night. They've been working on this for a year. And
surprise.
Guess what? The Republicans screwed over the Democrats in the spending bill. Shocking. You would think with the Charlie Brown pumpkin patch so close in the history of their minds, they remember the whole thing with the football. But no. And there is some upside to this because it, you know, because Harry Reid could not get it I mean, the vote that was taken, I don't even think there was a vote, actually. Harry Reid figured out that he could not get cloture closed on this, so that he didn't start debate on it, basically. And he pulled the bill. You need 60 votes to close discussion or file for cloture. He realized he couldn't get it. He pulled the bill. That opens up the docket for Don't Ask, Don't Tell. I'm getting ahead of myself, so give me a minute. Let me just tell you essentially the implications of what's happened. If there is no spending bill, the government would have to shut down. So what will happen is they'll end up passing a temporary one so that the Republican House will then have more control over this spending bill. Develop it, then it'll go to the Senate. Which means that it's very likely that they will cut spending significantly. What does that mean? It means that all of the benefits that were supposedly coming to us, stimulative benefits from this tax cut, guess what? Do I have a bye-bye?
Oh. Hey, what happened?
Yeah, what happened to the stimulative value of those tax cuts? Well, I'll tell you what happened. The Republicans offset that with cuts in government spending. Government, there it is. End of ball game. What? That seems pretty ridiculous. Why wouldn't they have attached the tax cut deal to passing the budget? Good question.
Hey, what happened?
Well, the Democrats got played again, I guess. Or the alternate view is they didn't get played. They didn't get played, and somebody figured this was going to happen, and so be it. I don't know. I don't know if anybody really knows. This could be the question that on our deathbed. You know, Richard Holbrooke says, get out of Afghanistan. The rest of us will be lying on our deathbed going, were they stupid or nefarious? Were they incompetent or just smart enough to realize how they could separate the middle class from their money in enriching their wealthy donors? I don't know. I don't know. But we will, it looks like, and I'm going by David Day in here, who, you know, I don't know. This guy's some type of Cylon or something. I don't know. Seriously, I keep saying this, but I just don't know how he does it. There are two cloture votes that are going to be scheduled, that were scheduled when Reid gave up this vote on the omnibus bill. The DREAM Act and repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Now, according to Dayen, who is was a fairly sophisticated watcher of these things, he said, when you have two votes like this stacked upon each other, where one's coming right after the other, there's every reason to believe that the first one, there's a feeling that it's not going to pass. In other words, Dayen does not anticipate being able to reach cloture on the DREAM Act. In other words, that is basically, he anticipates, is going to be dead on arrival. But there is 60 votes for cloture on Don't Ask, Don't Tell. And if that passes, there's every reason to believe that a vote will come on Saturday or Sunday to repeal Don't Ask, Don't Tell, and it will be repealed. There is an intense race to get this votes and any votes that are necessary to be achieved, short of start maybe. Start you won't need. You'll have a couple of Republican votes. By the end of this weekend, because it was announced yesterday, the Democratic senator from Oregon, Ron Wyden, has prostate cancer and wanted to go surgery on Monday. He'll be out probably for the rest of the week, best case scenario. Knock on wood, he recovers very quickly. If the Senate's got to be in session on January 4th after Christmas, they will. The Republicans have been taking a beating on this. Jon Stewart, the comedian, had a very disturbing and powerful interview with four first responders, firemen, a unionist, a cop, I think, guys who are suffering. I know a cop, a buddy from upstate, state trooper, was down here, works canine, was down here with his dog. He's had respiratory problems for a long time. And there's no coverage for these guys. There's no coverage. And he had him on and asked him, how does it feel that the Republicans feel like, eh, they're going to filibuster this? How does it feel when you hear the Republicans say it's an affront to Christmas to work near Christmas? Not on Christmas, near Christmas. I don't know. I mean, tell that to these first responders who all work, if not on Christmas, a lot of them do, every day afterwards. My wife's mother is a nurse. She's working on Christmas. And it's a Saturday. Somehow it's offensive to Christians. I don't know. What's going on with that video? Say no more, Dorsey. Say no more. Now, the upside of this omnibus thing not passing, as we said, is it looks like it's going to, don't ask, don't tell, is going to move to the front. And I have a huge apology to make. I'll probably make it towards the end of the show to someone who I do not like. But other things that have gone down with this omnibus, a second engine for the F-35, that's pretty waste of money, according to Dave Dayan. This thing that was snuck in there, civilian trials for Guantanamo Bay, which was snuck into there by in the House bill. I talked about it with Glenn Greenwald. That goes by the wayside, though I'm sure they'll get it back in, right, come spring. Although, you know, it changes. The dynamic changes now. Now the Democrats can afford to be Democrats again on some level. It's a little bit depressing that that's the way it works, but I don't know. Maybe these guys don't know how to act when they're in the majority, or maybe they're just, I don't know. I don't know. Democrat Jay Rockefeller no longer has a good vehicle for his amendment to stop the EPA from carbon regulation. That was going to come up. Kay Bailey Hutchinson's anti-net neutrality amendment also has no legislative vehicle, so that's pretty good. But, of course, the stimulus is completely screwed, and you know, there'll be no jobs. Republicans will be very happy about it because nobody has set the table. Nobody's made the argument that you need government spending for stimulus because Obama's out there talking about how government spending's a problem. So say what you will about legislative deficiencies. I've always complained about the rhetorical deficiencies because if you do not provide cover, and for all you establishment Democrats out there who tell me that the president has no ability to control anything, except for when he does. What he does have the ability is to educate the American public, to create an ideological framework, or not even an ideological framework, a framework of reality, like government spending helps the economy. But Obama has neglected to do that. And frankly, we don't hear it that much from those liberal establishment types either, except for in their policy papers. But we all don't have time to go to, you know, the 92nd Street Y to listen to, or what am I, that's not even the driest of it, you know, to go to some economic forum. Sorry, don't. All right, we're going to take a break. We'll be right back with Chris Rosen. We are back. You know, I get a lot of people, not a lot, but I almost get more emails about this noise than I do, like, hey, great to hear from you, Sam. It's more like, hey, you know, it really is distracting when you turn the volume up on your computer to have an interview. I just wanted to let you know that. Okay, folks, I've turned up the volume on my computer because I'm welcoming our, you know, our most frequent guest on this show, which is doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever.
That's just because we have such a good rapport, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, I sort of think of it like, you know, it's like the old days. That's probably what it is. I'm reminiscing for the old days.
Yeah. Not that the segment's any good. That's what you're saying? Kind of. You know.
I forget that, you know, Chris can actually see me. If you're on the Samicam, you can see me too. But Chris can see me because we do like a video chat.
Very high tech.
A lot of guests can't see me, so that, you know, I could lie. Like Chris, I could be going like, no, I love the thing. And, you know, people would see like the sour face, the sour look on my face. But I can't get away with that with Rosie.
No, I'm looking right at you.
So, Chris Rosen, he is the senior editor at Movie Line.
Yes.
MovieLine.com. You know, when I was working at Cafe China in Inman Square in Boston, in Somerville, or maybe it was Cambridge. I don't know. It was right on the line. I was the day manager because I was the only guy working there who spoke English and was in the front. And so nobody argued with me when I referred to myself in that way.
No, there's a whole big staff at Movie Line.
I'm not making them. I'm not making
You're just saying.
I'm just saying. I mean, because we've asked you who the junior editor is.
Well, there is no junior. There's no person titled junior editor, but
right. No, I understand.
We have many people.
I'm sure. There's no doubt. I'm looking at you right now. You practically half one foot is in your bathroom while you do this. All right. So you're not even the most unprofessional thing I've ever seen. Yes, it's good. Today you're dressed.
And I shaved for you. You didn't even notice.
No, I did notice. I did notice.
Okay,
very cute.
Last week you were very concerned about my safety and stuff. I meant the well-being because I hadn't shaved.
Not safety so much, but you were going in for a job interview or something, you said. And
No, not a job interview. It was just an interview.
Okay. Whatever. Whatever you say. All right, so now what was the movies that you suggested last week?
Oh, so many, Sam. Like, it's so hard to even remember. I know I suggested The Third Man for you on Netflix.
Right.
Instant watch.
Yes, we
which
did not watch.
Maybe,
you know what happens?
Watch.
You know what the problem is? Is that now on, you know what I do on the weekends?
Is what?
I answer emails.
Ugh, you're too popular.
No, it's not I'm too popular. They're all, I'm answering emails about
the clicking
swag.
Of the mouse.
About swag. Oh.
And on Netflix, and on demand, I said, please give, which I thought was good with Catherine Keener.
Oh yeah, please give. All right. Well, I got a whole list here because
you
know.
Got a whole list. You got some more.
Well, you know, when we go, when we're going to go for the holidays, I got nothing to do,
right?
Except for sit there, and so I'm going to watch a bunch of movies because I shoved my kid out in front of my in-laws. You know, that's basically the way I keep that. It's like a force field, and then Nikki goes and sees her friends, and I sit and watch TV.
Nice.
So, all right. So, what else we got? What do we got this week?
Well, this week we have. I'm going to give you one on demand, and then the instant watch. We'll go a little in the archives for the instant watch. But for on demand, I think you know a lot of people probably forget this movie even existed. But it's called Cyrus, and it came out over the summer.
Cyrus.
And it's got Jonah Hill and John C. Reilly and Marissa Tomei.
Okay, and what's
you
this
remember
about?
This movie?
No.
Okay. Well. It's in that it's directed by the Duplass brothers, who are like these mumblecore, you know, kind of staples. Dorsey would know what I'm talking about.
Mumblecore. I know what mumblecore is.
Yeah, you know what mumblecore is. It's usually pretty shitty.
Mumblecore is like the sort of like low-end filmmaking, and it's just sort of like – it's like slacker.
Right. It's exactly like that. It's basically like, hey, I'm a filmmaker now because I bought a flip cam, and I'm going to film my friends sitting on their stupid couches. But if you do it right, sometimes it's fun. So this movie is a little more of a high-gloss version of Mumblecore because it's got legitimate actors in it like Jonah Hill, John C. Reilly, and Marissa Tomei.
Okay, yes, he's a great actor.
John C. Reilly is an Oscar nominee, so is Marissa Tomei. Anyway, it's about,
I've been in a scene with Marissa Tomei. You know that, right?
No, I haven't.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Really? It was.
Were you an extra?
No.
Oh.
The movie is called Happy Accidents.
My cousin. Okay.
Happy Accidents, and I played a former boyfriend. I mean, it was two very quick scenes.
Was that a Don Ruse movie?
No, it was a Brad Anderson movie.
Oh, okay, that's right, Brad Anderson. That's a good one. Look at that, Sam. Nice. I'll have to put that on my Netflix queue.
Yeah, have you ever seen Next Stop Wonderland?
Yes.
I have a big part in that.
Oh, I didn't know you then.
All right.
Anyway, Cyrus. So Jonah Hill. So
movie
line,
excuse
me,
your editor.
I'm sorry, I don't know your intimate details of your IMDb.
No, no, it's not a big deal. You've known me for years. You're a professional movie guy. You don't even know.
Next on Wonderland.
Yeah, that's all right. Hope Davis's right. First. I got some great stories for that, too.
Yeah, no, we should do that one. Let's do a segment on that.
No, I don't think so.
Well, we could talk about it on IM.
Probably not.
If you want to talk to me.
No, it's not.
You never respond. We don't have that.
Let's not get carried away.
Anyway, Jonah Hill. Professional. John C. Reilly is a big kind of dorky loser. Another movie with Catherine Keener in it. She plays his ex-wife. And Matt Walsh from UCB is her
I know Matt.
Friend. Matt's a very, very funny. Very, very funny. So anyway, she's trying to set, you know, John C. Reilly up with, like, a new girl because he's kind of, you know, a kind of a loser. Anyway, he meets Marissa Tomei at a party. They immediately hit it off, and everything's going great. He goes over. They sleep with each other. Everything's great. And then it turns out that she has a 23-year-old son who lives with her, and that's played by Jonah Hill. And he is extremely creepy, and their entire relationship is extremely creepy. And basically, right.
Don't ruin it.
I'm not going to ruin it. I'm just telling you, they end up having a little antagonizing, you know, fight. Jonah Hill and John C. Reilly. It's not ruining it. If you saw the trailer, you would know that. It's on the poster.
I never saw the trailer. That's the whole point.
Yeah, I'm not ruining it. There's a lot of twists and turns. It's incredibly awkward and incredibly lived in because it, like, feels legitimately real at times. Like, it's so incredibly uncomfortable.
Okay, fair enough.
And it was a pretty good movie that many people forgot even came out. It came out over the summer. That's kind of why, probably. Came out around Toy Story 3.
Nikki's dad has a big TV, too. Like a big one of those wide.
Well, this one, you know, like I said, this is a mumblecore one. You could watch it on a 13, you know, on a laptop, and it would look
fine.
That's
basically what we have in my house.
So you'll be fine. And the
on-demand. You know what TV I have at my house?
What?
Remember that Air America raffle? They were raffling off one of those TVs, and I won it. The best feeling in the world. I've been fired. I just walked in one day. Where's my TV, assholes?
I'd love to know what happened with all that crap that was up there.
No, I got the TV. I don't know why, but I got a TV. It's like a, it's like a 25 inch. But it's,
I'm sure
you're
not the
huge.
Only one who took a TV from Air America.
No, I didn't take it. I won it.
I know, I'm saying, even though you legitimately won it, I'm sure you're not the only person who could.
All right, we got to speed this up. I got another guest coming. Come on.
I know. Okay.
Second
last one. Just a quick movie we've all seen it a million times, but True Grit comes out next week. With Jeff Bridges, it's a Coen Brothers movie.
Right.
You're not going to see it because you have a family and obligations. So instead, why don't you watch The Big Lebowski on Netflix on Instant Watch? You've seen it a million times. It's a great movie. Jeff Bridges is a classic in it. He won his Oscar last year for Crazy Heart. He probably should have won it for The Big Lebowski because I don't think he's ever been better.
I auditioned for that movie.
Did you?
Who back in the day when I was an actor. I don't even
you know who you would have been perfect, actually, for? The Philip Seymour Hoffman character as a lawyer.
Yeah.
That was probably who you auditioned for, right?
It's probably true.
Yeah.
That guy.
Yeah. You were... Anyway, so those two, Sam.
All right.
I think those are good ones.
I think Cyrus
will be difficult to watch for Nikki. She might be a little uncomfortable, but it's a good one anyway.
Weird. All right. Chris Rosen, thank you so much, sir. Soon we're going to have you in studio, right?
Yeah, right, in the new year. But I guess I won't see you next week because it's Christmas Eve, and I'll be off.
Okay, fair enough. I probably will be
gone,
too. But
I'll see you in the new year.
All right. Have a great new year.
You, too.
Okay.
See
you. No. I'll see you the week after.
Yeah.
All right, bye. We're going to take a break. When we come back, folks, I'm going to bring on a guest who actually is, I'm about to become his coworker. It's very exciting. We'll be right back. This is the Majority Report. We are back. This is the Majority Report. I am Sam Cedar on the, well, I guess actually it's the computer. I am very, very, very excited to introduce someone who I am going to be, I'm going to become his co-worker, and I can't tell you how excited I am about this. I am, of course, talking about Mike Papantonio of Ring of Fire. Mike, welcome to the program.
How are you, Sam? There's very few progressive talkers I'd rather be a co-worker with. I got to tell you, we're looking forward to the new Ring of Fire. Everybody, and I'll tell you, we are covered. Look, let me tell you, it's been announced one time. We are covered up with emails about how happy people are to see this union between me, you, Bobby Kennedy. I think we're going to have a lot of fun. Everybody misses David Bender. I got to tell you, they're going to miss David Bender tremendously. But, you know, he's going to take some time off, head over to Europe, and write a few books. And at some point in the near future, you know, maybe he'll get back into the business. He's been great as a progressive talker for so long. You know, he started when you and I did.
Yes. David was the guy who basically, when we went to the RNC, the DNC in 2004, he was basically coordinating Air America's entire sort of program there, I guess.
What's remarkable, Sam, is you've built such an incredible following. I remember the early days being on the show with you and Janine Garofalo. You had the edge then. You have the edge now, and that's what people want, man. They want to hear something that sounds edgier than, you know, main traditional media.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, Pap, one of the things that I've always, generically, but, even more so that I can put a face to it, is that I have always had such tremendous respect for the work you do. I mean, not just people. I think my audience knows you as a commentator and as a guy who has a radio show. But you're tried to be derided as a trial lawyer, and I'll say this: what litigators like you do, and I've said this many times. Is so important to this country, particularly when we have gone through 10 years where we had a Republican administration, and the last two, I think, Obama, one of the few things he's done is repaired this to a certain extent, but has completely stripped the regulatory authority of our government. And there's only one thing that stands in between. Once that happens, there's only one thing that stands in between corporations doing whatever they want, putting workers and consumers and just citizens at risk, and taking advantage of society in many different ways. There's only one thing that stands between them and success, and that is people like yourself, people who are willing to go out there and to fight these corporations in court and essentially create a disincentive for them to do stuff like pollute our environment, poison our children, poison our air, cut corners for their workers, whatever it is, and I don't know if people fully grasp how that's why trial lawyers are demonized so much by the right wing, is because they know they're the last protection for citizenry, when government regulatory authority has come up short.
You know, Sam, about 15 years ago, Karl Rove always has his fat, greasy fingers all over everything that's ugly. And about 15 years ago, he had a meeting with the powers that be. No other way to do it. It's this the really shadowy, dark neocon group that runs this country in a lot of ways. I mean, the Richard Mellon Scaife Group, the Koch brothers, the Coors brothers, the Heritage Foundations, all these shadowy groups that really are in control of most parts of our lives, everything from media to, going and buying a carton of milk. I mean, I know that sounds like an overstatement, but it's not. But 15 years ago, Karl Rove met with those guys, and he said, look, what we have to do to put you in power forever, we have to destroy the American labor movement. We have to destroy American unions. We have to make them look like they are no longer important or significant. We have to diminish the size of government to where it is almost not recognizable. You have to make regulations disappear. You have to make government disappear. And you have to turn people against those two things to make that happen. And you see, the other thing we have to do is we have to make claimants' lawyers disappear. And if we do that, then we can build vehicles that kill people when the gas tanks explode. We can build pharmaceutical products that kill and cripple and blind people. We can allow all types of things to occur. We can defraud people. We can let Wall Street defraud mom and pop pension plan holders, and you can get away with it. Now, we know about the meetings. It was a series of meetings. It was Karl Rove. It was the very people we're talking about. Part of it was we have to have our guys in charge. We have to have the guys that don't ask questions, that don't even read a book enough to know to ask questions. We have to have the George Bushes and the Ronald Reagans. We have to have that. So part of the strategy of really building a corporatist America, where corporations and the big money, the top 1% of Americans' most affluent, of America's affluence, where they run everything. Part of doing that is to take away government to where there are no regulations, take away the unions to where there's no voice for the average worker, even though the unions built America's middle class, take that away, and make sure that we demonize and vilify the lawyers who take us to court when we dump arsenic into children's drinking water because it's cheaper to do that, because we don't have to pay to clean it up. We simply dump it into the aquifer and let them worry about all those things. So that's part of the plan. And so, you know, I'm proud to do what I do. We've handled the biggest, we've handled literally the biggest cases in America, everything from human rights cases to the tobacco litigation to the asbestos litigation, the biggest pharmaceutical cases in the country. We're handling the BP case. We're one of the four firms handling that. And I tell you all that because with that, Sam, comes my politics. With that comes the ring of fire. You have to have anger in talk radio. If you don't have anger in talk radio, well, hell, you know, turn on the nightly news. Go listen to the nightly news. If you don't want to hear anger, if you don't hear outrage, if you don't want to hear what's real, turn on the frigging nightly news. But don't turn on Ring of Fire. Because if you're somebody who's offended by the attack talk politics, you will not like Ring of Fire, because we are not. I don't buy into what Jon Stewart said about let's be humble, let's be nice, let's sing Kumbaya. I don't buy into that. I don't buy into this ridiculous new movement that started by Republicans called No Labels, where we're supposed to, I guess, all hold hands and walk to the ditch and let them shoot us in the back of the head so we fall in a lot easier. I'm not into all that. We have to fight back, and that's what Ring of Fire does. And Sam, I'm telling you this, both Bobby Kennedy and I said, who in America, what person in America do we want to have by our side in that fight? And it was you. And we're so proud to have you joining us on Ring of Fire. I just can't tell you.
Well, I appreciate it. And, you know, I'm obviously really big fans of both of yours. And you know, that's the thing is, you don't have to be doing radio. I mean, that's the thing is, you know, that's the thing I really appreciate about what you do. You know, when you're doing your show, both you and Bobby, it is because you're driven by your beliefs. And so let's end the mutual appreciation society for a minute, and let's talk about some issues that I know that you are following. You know, we had touched a little bit, you know, this tax deal obviously, and the destruction of this omnibus bill. Spending bill basically means that the Republicans will be able to, in February, say, look at how much the deficits ballooned because of the tax cuts. Right. They won't say because of the tax cuts. And then they'll cut government services, all part of that plan of what you were just referencing. But I want to talk about, because I know that you obviously follow this stuff closely as an attorney, about this this Medicare ruling. There is some word that... you know, and I'm referring to in Virginia, this
Hudson. People don't know this story. The story is an ugly story, but it's the story that emerges all the time. Look, you've got this Hudson, this Judge Hudson, Well, first of all, he's the guy who he committed the most atrocities. I mean, when you take his history begins with Ruby Ridge, where he was basically labeled an incompetent. Because what he allowed the U.S. Marshal Service to do was go in and murder an entire family. And they did it for no good reason. And there were days and days of hearings about who was the most incompetent. And it came up that there's only one way you could conclude that person was Judge Hudson, who made the ruling that an element of Obama's health care reform is violative of the Commerce Clause. Right. Now, let me just tell you something. It, you know, having done a fair amount of litigation, I can tell you that is the biggest stretch that you can imagine. It's complicated to explain, but it is a huge, ridiculous stretch. But why did he make the stretch? That's the issue. Because he received money. You see, this is a guy who's received between somewhere around $5,000-$15,000 year after year from Campaign Solutions, this organization called Campaign Solutions. Well, who is Campaign Solutions? They are the people who fought health care reform. They are part of that shadowy right neocon elite that I'm talking about. As a matter of fact, real interesting here, Sam. Campaign Solutions were the people who helped Ken Cusinelli, who is the attorney general there in Virginia. They helped him get elected, and then Cusinelli's the person who brought the case in front of Judge Hudson.
Right.
Now, you see, so it's incestuous as hell. The Campaign Solution is also the group, you know, they helped support the Swift Boat Group. They were the ideas in the money part behind the Swift Boat Group. They were they're the money and brains behind something called the JCN, which is a judicial nominee. It's a real conservative, right-wing, shadowy, neocon elite organization that is joined at the hip with the religious right, and they worked night and day to push through the worst nominations that we now have to live with, the Alitos, the Roberts, and from the trial court levels to the appellate court levels in the federal system, the hacks, the political hacks. I don't even consider them jurists. I certainly don't consider them lawyers. I don't consider them jurists. Most of them come from political backgrounds. They're not right. Really, they don't come up in the judiciary. But that group, the JCN, that is supported by Campaign Solutions, they're the people behind that money. Now, look, I got to tell you something. It didn't stop there. If you follow the money of Campaign Solutions, what ends up happening is you see that they're the money behind, they were the people that helped the Bush-Cheney in 2004, McCain for president, Jim DeMint in South Carolina, Jim Inhofe from Oklahoma, friends of Catherine Harris, that screwball from Florida who basically helped commit fraud in the Gore-Bush election, right. Friends of Giuliani. These guys, their whole angle, their whole mission in life is to make sure that right-wing neocon nuts prevail. It's called Campaign Solutions. Judge Hudson has gotten money from them. Judge Hudson is joined up at the hip with them. And it's no mistake that the reason he had to stretch to come up with a decision that Obama's health care reform bill was not good is because it's just trash legal analysis. It's garbage legal analysis coming from somebody who has so little capability that he is little more than a political hack.
And we should add, I mean, you know, it was so clearly an ideological decision, but one that runs completely contrary to what the right likes to pretend is their judicial philosophy, which is you do not overturn the will of the people as manifested in the legislature. And of course, this is what, in fact, he is, you know, at least ruling or attempting to do. But let me ask you this, Pap. As ridiculous and unfounded from a legal perspective as that decision may be, you know, and from a political perspective, as far as I'm concerned, let the mandate die, and if it's severable, let the insurance companies die with it. But what do you think?
Look,
but what do you think? Let me ask you this: it's got to go to the appellate level. We're not clear on who's going to end up with that case, and most legal scholars say there's no way the Supreme Court would ever concur with this decision. But
now, can I tell you something? They won't concur with this decision, Sam. That's not the issue. The issue is to whether or not you will have a division within jurisdiction, whether you'll have two federal courts saying A and two federal courts saying B. And so then the Supreme Court then gets jurisdiction over that issue to try to resolve and to try to make common sense out of those two issues. That's where they do the damage. Now, would they buy into the Commerce Clause? Probably not. You know, if my guess is the way they'll attack it is really going to be more it's going to center more around the idea of taxing without authority to tax. You see, and I know that sounds like a nuanced complication, but here's what it means. Congress has the right, they have almost unfettered right to raise taxes, to lower taxes, to do all types of things with taxes. When this bill came through, they worked desperately to try to say this is not a tax. Now, if you look at the history of it, time and time again, they said, no, this is not a tax. It's not a tax. It's not a tax. Well, if it's not a tax, the question is, then did they overextend their authority to be able to place a new burden on a state that has to supplement some part of it? And that's really where it's going to come. Let me tell you, when you have Alito and you have Clarence Thomas and you've got Scalia, Roberts, when you have jurists that call themselves, I mean, they put on a black robe and we think, oh my God, these are the smartest guys in the world. Well, they're not the smartest people in the room at all. And if you look at every one of them, there's no way you could conclude that Clarence Thomas or Alito or Roberts or, you know, Scalia loves to talk like he's the smartest guy in the room. But look at their history. They're not the smartest guys in the room. They're political hacks. So if they get the chance to get this case, they will do something with it. That's my call on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, you know, many legal scholars say that, but they're the same guys who said there's no way the Supreme Court is going to take Bush v. Gore. There's no way. There's just no way. There's no way they could ever justify it.
There's no way they're going to allow Citizens United to happen, but they did it. It's an agenda. Look, Sam, while we over the years have been worried about who's going to be elected to Congress, these neocon nuts goes all the way back to when I was telling you about when, the turd blossom, Karl Rove, put his ugly fat fingers all over the direction of what the neocons were going to do. And part of it is to stack the judiciary.
Right. I mean, this is has always been, and frankly, they've done a very good job of obstructing Obama's nominees. I mean, I think they got four through last night.
And I tell you something, they've done a good job on the judicial nominees, but Obama's responsible for part of that.
Right.
Obama, it's amazing. It's like he woke up one day and he said, now let me get this right. About 35% of my nominees have been put through. If I compare it to what other presidents have done at this point, he's about one quarter to one half of what most presidents have accomplished. Now understand, this president calls himself, he's a constitutional law professor, for God's sakes. If anybody should understand what FDR was faced with during his years, FDR would come through with all types of wonderful safety net social programs that they used to call communism, socialism back then, just like they do now. And the judges would take it away, you see. Mm-hmm. So this isn't new. I mean, Obama sees what's coming. Everything he tries to accomplish is going to be taken away by the courts. And rather than doing what he should be doing, he simply doesn't have that force of personality where it comes to governing. Now, he certainly has the force of personality in front of a microphone. But when it comes to governing and getting things done, it's just, this is another example of 39, maybe 39%, somewhere in that range, of his nominations have made it through the process.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Let me just ask you before, I mean, I know you got to go in a minute, but let me just ask you in general, like, what's next for progressives? I mean, you know, this has been a fairly, it's a frustrating period of time because, at Air America, we fought so hard to help get a Democratic majority and, you know, with the idea of, even in starting in 2006 with the idea of, okay, you know, we're going to start to shift from more and better Democrats to just better Democrats. And here we had 2 years of an incredible opportunity, an incredible will of the American public for some type of progressive change. We had majorities in both the House and the Senate, historical majorities, and are pretty darn close to historical, and controlled the executive branch. And at the end of that, it feels like, you know, we still have George Bush's tax cuts. We have a lot of problems with civil liberties. We have we're no closer in some respects to the most efficient and cheapest way to deliver health care to all Americans. I mean,
we're still in a military quagmire and right. Afghanistan. And look, here's the point. Obama, in a lot of ways, was a mirage. And it is, and it's our fault. I mean, you know, we're hopeful people. Progressives are far more optimistic than most people. I mean, if you were to take a personal profile, you'd find that progressives are incredibly optimistic. So all of a sudden, we see something that starts looking like Camelot again. We're, you know, the old RFK days, the JFK days, the, you know, days when government really, really served. And all of a sudden, it's a mirage that we talk ourselves into, and we say, okay, if we can just allow this to happen, everything's going to be okay. And we want to believe that. But, I mean, the problem is, along with being optimistic, we are ridiculously stubborn when it comes to this notion of being wrong about something like that. In other words, we'll hold on to it. It's like a pilot. He's lost an engine. And he says, okay, well, I'm going to keep flying. I'm going to keep doing what I'm doing. I'm not going to land the airplane. And he loses the other engine. And he said, okay, well, it's a recognition. We're so slow to recognize what's happening to us. If you read some of the material that's out there right now by great writers like Ted Rall, for example, has written a great thing called the Un-American Manifesto, where he's talking about, something remarkable has to happen until we really do understand it. And we thought that was going to be maybe the economic meltdown, but no, the same people went back to the polls and put the same boneheads back in office. And so at some point, what ends up happening with progressives who've worked hard for so many years to try to make something change, I'm hearing more and more, Sam, more than I've ever heard, where those people that put big money into all this, they've put their effort, they've put their lives into trying to affect change, are saying, you know what? Maybe we're wrong about what America really is. Maybe Alabama, Mississippi, Texas, Louisiana, Georgia, you know, the real right-wing Midwest, maybe that is America, and the two coasts are not America. And maybe we're just trying to create something that you can't really create. For the first time, I'm hearing that from people who've worked very hard, put in big money, big effort, who really care about this country, that they're saying, well, maybe we're just wrong about what America really represents. Maybe that's us. Maybe we don't want to see it, but maybe that's us. Mm-hmm. And I hate to see that happening. It's happening with a lot of my friends who've put millions and millions of dollars into the process and effort and blood, sweat, and tears to affect change. But they're saying, well, you know, maybe this is what they want, and we can't do anything about it. I don't choose to believe that. I'm going to keep fighting about it. But these are big questions, and they're occurring right now. I mean, we're living through some very significant history right now.
Yeah, you know, it's tough to say, and things can change so quickly. I certainly don't think there's anybody who would have predicted we are where we are today 2.5 years ago.
Yeah.
So, all right, well, listen, Mike, I'm so excited. You guys have, the show plays tomorrow for most people across the country, Saturday. And then next week is a repeat, and we'll be starting. I'll be joining you guys the first week in January.
All right, we're looking forward to it, Sam.
And folks, you can go to ringoffireradio.com, see if your local affiliate carries Ring of Fire. It's getting picked up. I mean, this is a really exciting thing, Pap, for me, because to be back on radio and to have such wide clearance, the show has grown exponentially since its days on Air America.
Amazing. Well, Pacifica Radio picking up so much of it. Huge on the West Coast, obviously. But anyway, it's continuing to grow leaps and bounds. And bringing you on, I can promise you, is going to make it grow more.
Well, I appreciate it. Mike Papantonio, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, we got another. I get another 5 minutes. Let's just go right through there, because no music. Stop the music. Stop the presses. Where's that thing? I got that thing that I really want to. I got to move on to my. Where is that thing? Is it this one? Is it this? Nope, that's not it. Where is that sound effect that I really like that I wanted to move on to my. That's not it. That's not it. Oh, here it is. No? That's not it. It's like Planet of the Apes, right? I mean, that's sort of where we're headed. You got to wonder, you know, Pat brought up this notion of, is this the country we live in? I just don't think it is. I just think that the country we live in is dominated by moneyed interests, very powerful interests. And I wanted to clarify something about, you know, Pap's profession as a claimant's attorney, I guess is the way they refer to it. You understand that no one believes that corporations set out to like, hey, how can we poison our children? How can we have people blow up in our cars? That's not what their agenda is. But what happens, and this is documented, I mean, is that they simply make a cost-benefit analysis. And that is, okay, it costs us this amount of money, and this is what BP's done. It costs us this amount of money. You know, they didn't add just that one sort of safety valve for an extra $500,000 or whatever it was. That many people feel would have averted this massive disaster. Cost us X amount of dollars extra to protect the gas tank. It costs us X amount of extra to include this nozzle on the drainage of our swimming pool. Whatever it is, they make that calculation. They say, okay, we know that it's going to cost us this much more. We know that it's going to eat into our profits by X percentage. What are the chances that someone's going to die? And if we sell 1 million of these units, or we drill 500 times or whatever we do, how many people will die? Okay, it's 10 people, it's 20 people, it's 100 people, it's 1,000 people, whatever it is. Actuarially speaking, how much will that cost us to pay off those people? It's 10 people, it'll cost us $10 million. But it will cost us $20 million to fix this problem. Well, that's an easy decision. It's let's just go with the thing that's only going to cost us $10 million. Those people die, they die, we'll pay it off. That's just part of what doing business is all about. We're going to weigh the cost. We're just going to do a cost-benefit analysis. There is no room for... There is no money attributed to... Hey, wait, this is a human being. There is no dollar value that captures that essence of it. It's just all actuarial. What do we pay off for life insurance costs? Well, that's it. And people like Pap, like what Pap Antonio does, and Bobby works with him on a lot of environmental lawsuits, what they do is they change that calculus for corporations. Instead of that life just costing $10 million, that life, because there's people like Mike Papantonio out there, may actually cost $50 million to this corporation. And so it changes the cost-benefit analysis, and this corporation polices themselves not because they give a shit about the human life, not because they care about the brain defects that or the developmental implications of putting arsenic in the water. No, because of what it's going to cost them. And the Chamber of Commerce and the right wing out there and the deregulators, they're all saying, well, this is going to inhibit business. And that's why we will demonize trial lawyers. That's why when we have control of the levers of the U.S. Attorney Generals, of the U.S. Attorney Generals under the Bush administration, we're going to use them to intimidate and press charges against these guys whenever we can. So that we can take them out of the equation. Because nobody goes to their board of director meetings and say, how can we poison children today? They just go, how can we maximize profits today? And there's nobody in that room who says, but wait a second. you're causing brain defects in children. There's nobody who will say that in that room until somebody says, how much will it cost us on the flip side, based on our savings, if we cut this corner? And that person will say, more or less than we're saving. That's it. That's the fact. And this is not to let corporations off the hook in any way for being nefarious. You know, just go listen to Wendell Potter. That guy was in charge of spying on Michael Moore. So, you know, I have such tremendous respect for what Mike Papantonio does. Never mind what he does on the radio. And, you know, I got news for you. Mike Papantonio doesn't need the radio career. He does this stuff because he cares about it. And same with Bobby Kennedy. And that's why I'm like genuinely honored to work with these guys, in addition to being big fans of both of them. But also, you know, it's such a pleasure to work with guys who are never going to say to me, maybe you should take it easy on that stuff. And so, you know, it's just to have the opportunity to have a job that you can really feel proud about. It's a real honor and a real treat, and I'm so grateful and thankful and excited about it. I got to finish with this. Now, when I heard last night that Don't Ask, Don't Tell, it hasn't happened yet. Everybody predicts that it's going to happen soon. It's going to happen before start. Which, to a certain extent, validates what I've been saying for the past week and a half. But I want to, you know, you guys listen too carefully to what I say. Joe Lieberman has been saying that this is a priority, and it led me to believe that it was not a priority. And so I'm going to have to... Joe Lieberman.
What was that saying?
I'm going to have to... to Joe Lieberman. I'm man enough to say, maybe I should wait until Monday. Maybe I should wait until Monday just to make sure. I'll wait till Monday. And if I'm wrong, I was wrong about Joe Lieberman, then I will, say I'm sorry to him. In the meantime, Alex Perrine at Salon.com says, like, as if he was writing to me at 1 in the morning last night. It's still okay to hate Joe Lieberman is the title of his piece. Why? 7 months ago, the guy introduced a bill that would automatically strip Americans of their citizenship if they were charged with a, quote, terrorist act. He named it the T Act. And why did he do that? Just because he likes to F with liberals.
You are a douchebag.
Joe Lieberman gets his kicks trolling the left. How else to explain he nearly torpedoed the fragile health care reform process by blatantly reverse himself on the Medicare buy-in for people over the age of 55?
You are a douchebag.
Liberals used to be told that while Lieberman was a hawk, he was a reliable liberal Democrat on domestic issues. That reliable liberal Democrat recently promised to fight to his last breath to protect the rights of our richest citizens to have smaller tax bills.
You are a douchebag.
Even before Iraq, this is the guy who took to the Senate floor to ponder the moral consequences of our country for Bill Clinton's misbehavior.
You are a douchebag.
He threw his debate with Cheney, repeated GOP talking points during the recount, and even voiced support for Social Security privatization.
You are a douchebag.
And then Perrine admits that despite this, it's true, Joe Lieberman has always proudly fought for the rights of gays and lesbians to serve openly in our armed forces. But why? Because he wants everyone in the military. He wants the military everywhere.
You are a douchebag.
All right, so I'll wait till Monday to apologize to that.
You are a douchebag.
I have a bunch of other stories. I'll get to them in the after show. And once the after show is sequestered for members only, you won't be able to hear it. Of course, that's not the case yet. Folks, listen. We need your memberships. We really do. There's only so long that I can buy single slice pizzas for Dorsey and Evan to have them keep showing up. This is going to be one day where they just don't show up because they found four quarters on the street. And they're like, why did we need to go into work today when we can buy lunch on our own? And also, justcoffee.coop. Check it out. And listen, if you're having a problem with downloading the podcast from iTunes, I don't know how you'd be listening to this if you wouldn't be able to get the... But email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. We'll deal with it. Hopefully we're going to be sending out a bunch of swag this weekend. See you on the other side. I am me at Majority FM. Dorsey was, like the sub-editor of AirAmerica.com? You got to turn on your mic if you're going to deny something.
It's always on.
Oh, what? What were you? Weren't you like the? You were like the number two guy on the website, weren't you?
No. I was the video content manager.
Jesus, no wonder why that place went bankrupt.
Exactly.
Video content manager. My goodness.
I didn't manage people. I managed video content.
Listen, if you can figure out Drupal, you can figure out WordPress. Let me tell you that right now.
No, I wasn't doing that with Drupal.
Oh. So I'm going over some of the majority reports. I'm going to put up some archive shows at the end of next week during Christmas and whatnot. I was thinking Fran Lebowitz might be good. I don't know. I have to go back and look over this, but... Man, we had Howard Zinn on. I mean, just go through like a couple of just random things. The people we had on that show were just unbelievable. Someday we'll get back to having that type of thing, but we had a much bigger operation. It's just tough to range all that stuff. All right, to the IM. From Lionel's website, majority follower. His Lionel Media website is the envy of the industry and thinking world. He describes himself as a Logadalius, an expert, but only to close friends. For the love of God, how would I know if I was on Majority FM other than looking at the address at the top that I'm on Majority FM? You don't tell us that I am on Majority FM. How do you describe yourself? Or I'm not just a close enough friend for that. I don't understand what he's saying. He's being facetious. Because I'm not. Oh, I see what you're saying. He's making fun of him for having a description of the website while on the website. Todd Slater, filling in for Countdown again. Awesome. I'm pretty sure everyone listening thinks it's a big deal. What days? 27, 28, 29. Congrats on Ring of Fire. You'll be bringing me along as a new subscriber. I'm ashamed to say I've never listened to before, despite my appreciation for all three of those guys. I'm one of those guys. Oh, I see what you're saying, Bender. Yeah. We'll be doing some great interviews on that show. And, you know, just to hear both Bobby and Mike's perspective on things is really, it's such a treat. You know, Bobby's just such a good, he's so good at articulating sort of the essence of liberalism in my mind. And the idea of that, you know, things like the environment and our natural resources are all of ours. That this is part of the commons, and we are constantly subjected to these to corporations essentially dumping their problems, their business problems, onto us. You know, they want to increase their profits for their shareholders when they produce a material, but it's, you know, one of the ways that they increase the profits is basically to create a problem for society. Dump arsenic into the water. We're not going to clean it up. You guys got to clean it up. I mean, it's almost in the same thing like when you see somebody litter. It's like, who the fuck do you think is going to pick that up? You're dumping. You walk around. You're holding in your hand. You know, I got an ice cream cone. It's melting. Or maybe ice cream cone's not a good because that sort of degrades. But I got a big greasy napkin from this pizza I ate. And I got it in my hand, and where's the wastebasket? Ugh, wastebasket's across the street, outside. I got to cross the street. That's going to cost me a couple minutes. I'm going to be late to my appointment, whatever it is, and you drop it on the ground. And so you've basically taken what was your problem, and you said, you know what, I'm going to dump it on somebody else. And who knows, maybe that thing washes down into the sewer and goes into the ocean, kills some fish, destroys our environment. Society will end up paying for that act one way or another. So you get off, and you think, no cost. But there is a cost, it's just not borne by you. Nefertiti, please ask everyone to DVR TV, TiVo the Ho. It's important for the ratings for you. It is. I will send out an email blast to tell everybody about it. I'm so pleased with both these new developments. A couple months ago, the country really needed your voice at this time. Well, I mean, you know, one of the great things for me, you know, about doing Ring of Fire is that it really is getting a lot of clearance. And, you know, one of the things I love about this show, I think I was saying this yesterday, is that, you know, I don't have to, it's a sophisticated audience. It's a smart audience. I don't have to do the latest story on, you know, help me out of here.
The guy who shot somebody in Florida.
Right. And, or, you know, the Anna Nicole Smith, or, you know, I use her now as my blanket version of Kim Kardashian.
Pick a Kardashian, any Kardashian.
I don't have to do, there's more than one Kardashian.
Oh, yeah.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
They are the Kardashians now.
Are there two?
There's three, I think.
Something like that.
Two other than Kim and then.
What happened to the Hilton sisters?
They got replaced by the Kardashians.
Oh, all right.
You gotta look ahead. See who's going to be ahead of the Kardashians.
I know. And so, you know, and then we don't have to do that type of crap on Ring of Fire. It's hardcore, man. And it's getting out there. Some places you can hear it during the week. They rerun an hour of it during the week. I mean, it's exciting. It's very exciting. Thank you, Neffer. You too. Ron Wyden is my senator, says Mac Mann. God bless him. Working near Christmas is only offensive to fake Christians who use it as a crutch. Not ever close to when Jesus would have been born. Well, okay. Fair enough. But you know who was working on when Jesus was born? Mary Magdalene. I'll tell you, it ain't easy, folks. There's a reason why they call it labor. Wait, no, it's not Mary Magdalene, right? Sorry.
Mary Magdalene, like James Carville's wife.
Oh, Mary Magdalene. Well, she works on Christmas. No, wait. It's the Virgin Mary.
That would be Mary. Mary Magdalene was the...
Right. Mary doesn't have a last name? Mary Jesus.
Yeah. Mary the
Mother
Christ.
Of God.
Yeah.
Mary Mother of God. Okay. Sorry, folks. Didn't mean to offend anybody. I don't know. I don't know the details. Should I just remind everybody what the Senate is doing tomorrow? Tomorrow they're going to have, I think I covered this, there's going to be a vote on cloture about the DREAM Act. About don't ask, don't tell, and that's it, right? Am I right? Kenny Mack, just curious if you saw the video I sent via Majority. It was an Irish gentleman explaining the Irish financial situation with some rather salty language. I didn't. I think I responded to you that you sent me the wrong link. And if you were talking about the Welsh guy from Brown, I think I want to have him on anyways. Waiting for vis-a-vis. Sam, thanks for playing the Pixies on the break. You're so amazing, well informed. It's really a pleasure listening to you. Thank you. Well, Josh, tell me you should do a quick rundown, a quick continuing resolution to fund the government because the Republicans blew up the one everyone negotiated. Obviously, somebody wasn't listening to the beginning of the show because I spent about 10 minutes going over all of that. I think I said that debate will come up next time in a more conservative Senate. I think I said that too. And I think I said that it's going to do, according to David Day, and who I agree with, it's going to really negate the effects of the stimulus. Listen, Joshy come lately. Don't show up late for the party and say, hey, I missed the open bar. What am I going to do? Hold the open bar open for all night? He said, sorry, I might have tuned out around the time you started talking about happy accidents. Listen, for your information, I talked about it before I ever talked about happy accidents. Hey, man, it's 12:30 at night. Wait, you already served the cake? Yeah, everybody ate the cake. The cake was delicious. Gulfstream 2, Pap's audio was really clear. How did you connect them? It was incredibly clear.
Yeah.
Sounds better than my audio. We connected him through Skype. It sounded incredible, didn't it?
He just must have had a nice setup on his end because we do a lot of things through Skype.
You know what you got to do? Get in touch with Scott and find out what that setup is. Because that sounded amazing. Gulfstream 2. Now I have two podcasts to subscribe to when I get a job. There you go. Pluger, will Majority Report membership give access to Ring of Fire podcasts, or will they still be locked up? That would be a good incentive for Majority Report membership, I would think. Yes, but I gotta ask them. I gotta talk to them about that. Maybe we can make some type of deal because obviously, they use that to generate revenue for them. I use Majority Report to generate revenue for me. But I know there's a lot of crossover. Maybe we can work out some type of deal. I got to talk to him about that. I mean, this is, you know, it's all happened very quickly. And, we're still trying to put this thing together. But that's definitely something I'm going to talk to them about. Pluger. I want to say one thing right now, ladies and gentlemen. In fact, I'm going to do this. I am going to wish Irma, Big Irm, as we like to say, happy birthday to you, and thank you for being a member. Happy birthday, Irm! Big Irm! Sam, do you think Republicans holding up START are just being obstructionist as usual, or is it they want to build and test new nuclear weapons? I think they're being obstructionist. I mean, I guess it's possible they have some real agenda, but you know, when you have any Republicans, you know, guys like Lugar, I mean, those guys are, you know, big. I think they're just being obstructionist. I think they're just basically, you know, because Rush Limbaugh is basically saying, I mean, you understand that the majority of the Republican Party now literally takes their marching orders from Rush Limbaugh. They cannot cross him, or they have to go on a show and apologize. Even Lindsey Graham, who used to, please, guys, the closet door, please, you shut that? I'm trying to do a show. That's why our sound doesn't sound as good as it's Pat's, because you guys don't pay any attention to audio dynamics. Even Lindsey Graham, please. Even Lindsey Graham, who, you know, always was mavericky, you know, had to go on and apologize to Limbaugh. And so it's really just because they're a-holes.
I wonder if he listens to those on loop, all those apologies, like when he's, like, on vacation.
Just to make him feel, yeah, exactly. That's what he plays when he's making love to his fourth wife or third wife. Let me put on a little something that the boys in the production office have put together. There's a little like a little mood music, and then just every Republican congressman and senator is called in. Oh, Rush, I just want to say I apologize. Politico completely misquoted me, and no, I totally agree with what.
Yes, Rush, I just want to say that you are certainly one of my favorite. I listen to you all the time. And it's fun.
Maybe we can make that for him.
Josh says that that movie segment's becoming Name Drop Friday. Well, Benjamin won't talk to me ever since I called him on air, so he won't do that. He won't do that. Reverend Jay, can you get on the Kennedy compound now? I don't think so. Gravitune 2001, I will be able to do a membership via anything else other than PayPal. I have a problem dealing with those folks. What about Justin Bieber? Something. Yeah, Gravitune. Listen, I am I'm working on an alternate to PayPal. It's going to take a little time, but I'm working on it. I'm working on it. I understand. Morella, I remember when you had Chomsky on the Majority Report. Janine was nervous and a little intimidated. We all were. Hi, Johnny. Hey, Sam, I refuse to believe this country is really that right wing. Read Eric Alterman's book, Why We Are Liberals. It gives plenty of stats on how most Americans agree with liberal beliefs but don't identify with liberals. I agree, hi, Johnny. And you know, look, like I say, the problem is that we're working up against just a massive amount of money. And, you know, this isn't just like, all right, we got a band, how do we break through? Or I got a small movie, how do I break through competing with all this money? That happens occasionally. But the money is not geared towards defeating that little band. Or, you know, so this is a marketing campaign on some level where we are severely, severely handicapped. And, you know, I don't know. Got my hair cut today.
Looks good.
Thanks. I don't know how we succeed here. Maybe it's just setting, you know, planting enough seeds so that if there's something, you know, sort of some meltdown of some sort that comes in, this, you know, maybe if we had a couple more years before, you know, maybe if Air America had started in 2000 and had gotten bigger and there would have been a predicate and more pushed. I mean, who knows? Which is why you keep doing it. Which is why you keep fighting. Josh is really harassing me today. Quote, hey, I ate a bagel with Matt Walsh once. Good for you, buddy.
Hey, I got a question actually about Name Drop Friday.
Oh, okay. Well,
Hope,
feel free.
Hope Davis, did you see the special relationship? The Bill Clinton, Tony Blair HBO movie?
No.
She was in it and she played Hillary Clinton. I can't believe she's not up for some kind of award this year. It was fantastic.
Oh, I never even heard of that movie.
It was really good. Dennis Quaid played Bill Clinton.
I don't know Dennis Quaid.
Do you know Randy Quaid?
I don't know Randy Quaid either.
You should.
I know Randy Rhodes.
You should check out some Randy Quaid news.
Dude, thing. I saw that video.
He's crazy.
You think so?
I think he's a little
crazy. Talking about the Jews, right? No, he's talking about the Jewish mafia that's taking out everybody.
Okay.
Yeah, why are they coming after Mel Gibson? It's because of the taxes. And yeah, it's very strange. If you folks have not seen this video, you know, that's the thing. Is if I ever did, like, any segments like that I would do. Because like, this is like, fucking, wow, he is crazy. Google Randy Quaid Canada, I think, probably would do it, right?
Probably do it.
Because he's like a political... But he's not fleeing in the same way that we all would flee to Canada. What was that movie? The great movie you did with Nicholson, he did a great movie with Nicholson, old one, very good. Can't remember what it is. When the oligarchy has control of information, the portrayal of actors via the mainstream media, which they have successfully taken over in their attempt to usurp the net, and you have people just trying to survive with little time left over to make concerted to seek the facts, no wonder there's pessimism and depression among progressive actors. Yes, I agree, CC. Congrats on Ring of Fire. Ring of Fire just got better. May have run forever. Thank you very much. Crystal Count. Fran Lebowitz's view 2 years ago, 2 years in, would be interesting. I thought Obama's election sort of validated her theory that change would come through culture, not politics. Yes, that's why I was thinking about, yeah. Similar to Janine's view that culture society progresses regardless of Washington. It's a long-term optimism in the face of dreadful present, but Obama's election partly represented a cultural shift she spoke of. It was a false change, but that's not the culture's fault. That's an insult to Magdalene. Cross yourself, Sam, Jewish or not. Sorry, I'm crossing myself. Super Funk, congrats, Sammy. Our Ring of Fire is perfect for you until bigger things. Smiley face emoticon. By the way, I'm totally making some of my extended family watch you on MSNBC if you're on the night of the 27th. Mwahahaha. The conservative extension. Thank you. I hope you're having that girl from yesterday back to do Sarah Palin impersonations. You should do a fake interview. Who's that? She's saying that Allison Kilkenny sounds like Sarah Palin?
Somebody said that yesterday. Same.
Really?
Oh, same guy. Did she? I didn't pick up.
I don't really listen to Sarah Palin.
Kevin Solomon Cohen, congratulations, Cedar. Ring of Fire's gain is John Bovey's lost. The Last Detail. Thank you, sir. That's the movie. Spayf, Sam, congratulations. Your continued success is our gain. Thank you. An open all-night bar might be fun. I agree. Humatic, what are your thoughts finally giving up on Democrats supporting Green Party candidate? Is this still generally accepted as an impossibility? Nationally speaking, yes. For me. Just because it's not viable. I mean, you know, I'd like to see more of a party infrastructure on the local level, you know, on some level, and, you know, some type of consistency between the parties. I mean, unfortunately, Ralph Nader really screwed things up. And I think a lot of people in Green Party agree with that too. You know, I fusion vote in New York for the Working Families Party. Fortunately, they've been under the gun. They can't, for some reason, they're not even being able to sort of maintain their independence in some respects. I mean, so I don't know. Maybe party politics is not even the answer. Maybe the answer is more, not necessarily issue-oriented, but on electoral reform or being transpartisan in some respects. I'm not sure. But in a general, generic sense, do I think the Green Party is the answer? No. I just don't. I may share their perspective on most issues more than I do the Democrats, but that doesn't mean that politically it's more effective. Harold, happy holidays, Sam. Thank you, Harold. Don't be a putz. Congrats on moving ahead of Richard Wolff on MSNBC's list of Jewish replacement hosts for Christmas. Thank you. Rank in order of excitement about your new gig. Evan, Dorsey, Nikki. Dorsey and Evan always are poker-faced. But Nikki's also poker-faced. Everyone around me. I can't tell. Everybody seems to be excited. Vaguely. Sandy McGee, I don't think the Ustream sound is on.
It should be. Let me recycle it.
Oh, wait. You may have covered this. What is your opinion about Richard Holbrooke? U.S. will widen war and militants inside of Pakistan? What the F? New York Times front page. Yes, I think that's problematic. The Pakistan. You know, Holbrooke, I'm of two minds. Because I do think he did some good things. But I also think he did some sort of horrible things. I think that's of the mind. I think it's probably not either or. You know, there is definitely a tendency to lionize these people, and you know, by making them out to be saints, then you know, American foreign policy is also saintly. You know, I have no idea what he was like as an actual person. I only know in terms of like what I've read about what he's done professionally, and in some instances I think it's pretty good. I think he probably saved some lives. I think he also probably allowed lives to be lost. Thank you, Sandy. CIA granted water borders a $5 million legal shield. I'm not sure I understand what that means. But I'll look it up. Thank you, Torresy. CIA agreed to cover at least $5 million in legal fees for two contractors who were architects. Oh, money well spent. You're indemnified $5 million if you waterboard anybody. That's so sweet. Do you know Adam Sandler? No. Ask Jimmy Reefer Cake. But Jimmy Reefer Cake, are you ready for this? You better be sitting down. And guess whose apartment Half-Baked was written? Yes, my apartment. Neil Brennan was my roommate. He and Chappelle wrote Half-Baked in my apartment. Yes. Yes. That's right. Good for you, he says. I thought you'd be excited. All right, folks. Yes, please do, Kenny Mac. Put it on the Facebook page. Folks, I will see you on Monday. Oh, hi, Johnny. Semester. Your semester just ended. That's not what you wanted. This is what you wanted. Da-da-da-da-da.
Charge.
Congratulations. Superfunk, I've always thought People's Party has a good ring to it. Green Party's too specific. Fair enough. All right, folks. See you on Monday. Bye.